Welcome back to Chasing Tone with your hosts, Blake Weiland and Brian Wampler. Blake,
here we are.
How are you doing? This is my late night DJ voice.
I feel like maybe this is like our NPR voice.
Yeah, it's kind of an NPR. Blake, it's good to have you back here on the podcast. A lot of things have happened this past week. There's some things we'll talk about.
It's wonderful to be back, and I want to talk about GMO pedals.
Genetically modified organisms, huh?
Mm-hmm. Pedals.
I don't think you can genetically modify a pedal. Well, I guess you could. Depends how. Not really a dream. Pedals don't have genes, but they have a basic skeletal structure, right? At least I call it that.
Well, we don't know that for sure. Like, you know, I don't know. You're the pedal builder. You're a mad scientist, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what's going on.
It's all magic. It's all smoke and mirrors. I don't do anything except play video games all day long. That's all I do.
Well, that's, you know, somebody's got to do it. You got your own Twitch stream going so people can watch you play.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm twitching all day long. Is that what you call it when you use it as a verb? Like, you know, if you're using Twitter, you're twitting or tweeting.
If you're Instagramming, you're gramming.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So if you're, you know, on the Twitch, then you're twitching, right?
It makes sense to me. I'll be perfectly honest, and this is going to out me as an old codger. I don't understand Twitch at all, or why you would want to sit there and watch somebody play video games. I don't get it. I don't understand. I feel very old because I know all the kids are into it, but I do not understand at all.
I'll be honest. I didn't understand it originally, and then this has been several years ago. My nephew actually was working for me. And he learned how to do some video editing. This is, you know, this might have been actually more like 6 or 7 years ago. Anyways, so he was doing some video editing, and I kept noticing every time I walked by his office that it looked like he was playing video games. So I was like, I'd walk in there like, what are you doing, man? You can't play video games while you're working. And he explained, like, no, it's just in my earbuds. It's like a podcast for gamers. Like, it's on the screen, but I'm just listening to what they're talking about. And you know, of course, you know, 40-year-old Brian was like, what? What do you mean you're listening to people playing video games?
Right.
I'm like, how is that even fun? He said, how is it even fun talking about Guitar Gear? Okay, I see your point. Everybody's got their thing, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, so. I do understand that. There's definitely a niche for everyone. I'm so not a gamer, it always surprises me. Like, I honestly kind of forget that video games exist. Because, like, even in the circles that I run in, we don't talk about video games that often.
Oh, you need to have a teenage boy then. You won't forget. I hear strings of profanity sometimes. I'm like, what are you kind of? What are you so mad about? And he's like, oh, this guy just did this to me on Fortnite or whatever. And I'm like, seriously, man, get a grip.
I didn't even know what Fortnite was until like a month ago. I had no idea. I kept hearing about it. I'm like, what is Fortnite? And then I Googled it. And I'm like, okay, but why is this such a big deal? I'm so old. I don't understand.
You are. Back in my day, we didn't have those things like Fortnite. So, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, we had to blow all the dust out of our cartridges. That's how we had to do it.
And you know what's oddly enough, I broke out the, it's the Nintendo reproduction, which I really want an old Nintendo. And I promise we'll get to Guitar Gear in a minute, but this is kind of relevant. So I have like this little Nintendo. You can buy them on Amazon. It's a digital version, right? So it's got, I don't know, 30 or 40 games or something on it that were popular. You plug it HDMI, so it's all new technology, but it's still, you know, the same games as what was on the old Nintendo. And you know, my son comes downstairs and I'm playing Mike Tyson's Punch Out. Just called Punch Out because licensing and all that stuff. It's just Punch Out. But you know, and he's like, and he's watching me like just destroy guys. And he's like, how in the world? Well, first of all, why are you playing this game? Those graphics suck. And so, you know. Second of all, he's like, how are you so good at this? And I was explaining, I'm like, son, you know how you play Fortnite and all that? This is what I've played. Mm-hmm. I would stay up all weekend long. And he's like, but So I was explaining, you know, and also the game can be over if you don't win. it doesn't just keep going. You know, you don't get unlimited lives like you youngsters these days do, you know?
Yeah, you got to set that kid up with some Contra and show him what's up.
But my daughter, on the other hand, my 12-year-old daughter, she likes Super Mario Brothers. So her and I will play, and she gets frustrated because, of course, that was another game that I spent stupid amounts of hours playing as a kid. And she's waiting for me to get done. I'm like, honey, it's going to be a bit. So, you know,
I guess. I just found out I have to Google it again. I mean, we'll get to guitars. I promise. But I just found out that there is a way when you do die in Mario Brothers, there is a way to, I can't remember what you hold, like select an A or something. You can Google it.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. You can get back to
restart where not exactly where you left off, but at least in the same world.
Right.
Which nobody knew about until like last year.
Like, yeah.
It's been a thing forever, but nobody really knew about it, which is kind of insane for how long that game's been out.
It is. It's crazy. Too bad we didn't have the internet back then. You know,
no kidding.
Of course, if we did have the internet back then, we probably wouldn't be playing video games. Anyways, yeah. So, all right. So I found something interesting in a Vox AC30 CC2 this week.
You sure did. I seen that post. Why don't we tell the audience about it?
Okay. So, now keep in mind, like I have this big pole barn that I put my little studio area in, right? So it's kind of like, imagine a pole barn and you open a door and it looks like a big apartment. It's kind of like a house within the pole barn almost. So anyways, outside of this area, because I have too many amps. I have a storage. I actually have what used to be my isolated amp room that's now full of amps, like stacked on top of each other. I'm out of room. And I use that stuff too as I'm designing things, right? I mean, if I need to know what a pedal sounds like through a Mesa Boogie Lone Star, I need to have that Lone Star to go play it. Mm-hmm. Which I know seems like a total waste of money. There's times I'm like, God, I should not be like hoarding this much gear, but it's a tool. Anyways, so I have this amp. It's the old Vox. It's the Chinese versions, the CC2s. And it's stuck in a corner because it's not worked right forever. I mean, we've done replaced transformers. We replaced everything you could possibly think to replace. And it got to a point where I'm like, you know what? This is it. I could have built a custom hand wired Vox AC30 for the amount of money I put in this thing. It still doesn't work right. For whatever reason, it still doesn't work right. I had several different techs, well-known techs. Well, one of them well-known, one well-known here locally, that went through it. And same thing. They're like, man, it's just for whatever reason, sometimes it works great. And then other times it just stops. And I can't figure out what's going on with it. In all reality, it probably had something wrong with a circuit board, if I had to guess.
Most likely.
You know, it's like, because it
replaced transformers and stuff.
Yeah, like, it was
an integral problem.
So. Yeah, it was crazy. So anyways, so I ended up buying a hand-wired Vox AC30, which I like a lot. But this amp, I just stuck it in the corner. And then I got to thinking, I'm like, you know what? I was considering like just selling, like either giving it away or selling it really cheap to someone that wanted to mess with it more. And honestly, it wasn't even worth it at that point. But I did notice that I had Aunico speakers in the back of it. I'm like, oh crap, I need to get those out of there before they get ruined. So I start to take the speakers out. Well, on a Vox AC30, at least on these, you have to take the chassis out, the part that all the tubes and the controls, all the guts of the amp. You have to take that out of it. And to take that out of it, you have to take the back off. You have to get behind the speaker. Like, you have to basically disassemble the entire amp to get the speakers out. So I was completely frustrated, pulled out the back, and there's this huge mouse nest. And I'm like, oh no.
Oh boy. Barn cat is not doing its job.
And keep in mind, my cat also lives in the barn here it sleeps in the barn when it's cold out. So, you know, I got a little cat bed for it and a little litter box. Anyways, so yeah, barn cat was not doing its job. So I pulled the amp was in my inside my rooms here. I pulled it outside because I thought there's a good chance there's still a mouse in here.
Yeah, it was a. You guys should go look at his post on Instagram. It was a big nest. It wasn't like I think I see something there. It was like there's a big pile of stuff.
Yes. Well, and to kind of back up a little bit, I also had I just bought a Leslie cabinet last fall that I hadn't got around to really messing with. So I took it to guy local here in town. Bill Stoltz is his name. If you're from Indiana, you probably know who, or central Indiana, you probably know who Bill Stoltz is. Super, really good luthier, works on amps really well. Anyway, so I took it to him like, Bill, I don't have time to mess with this, but I sure would like, you know, this to at least work and let's get it going. It's set in a barn somewhere for a while. It just needs some good loving care on it, right? And I talked to him the next day and he's like, I found a petrified mouse in your Leslie cabinet. And I'm like, what? He said, yeah, a mouse had got in there and built a nest and it died. And he's like, yeah. He's like, I washed my hands 10 times after bumping into that mouse. And I'm like, that is disgusting. So anyways, and that Leslie cabinet was sitting right next to this Fox. So I'm thinking, oh man, I know what happened. So I pulled the amp outside of the barn. The cat immediately starts circling it.
Oh, now you circle it.
Right, exactly. Now. I'm like, what? I made the job easy for you. Now you're taking all the glory. I got like a broom and tried to get some of the nest out. Well, mouse fell out of it. Cat immediately started running towards the mouse, but since it's fat and lazy, it didn't catch it. I'm like, I've got to feed you less, cat. You're getting spoiled.
Yeah, no kidding. It couldn't even catch it after it was out.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So I'm glad it wasn't in my room. I would have freaked the crap out if a mouse was running around in here. I would have pulled up my skirt and jumped on a chair and screamed like a like a 5-year-old girl. Anyways, so we, needless to say, the circuit board, everything else was completely not usable. So I pulled off what parts I could salvage, the tubes and, you know, that sort of thing, and trashed the rest, just threw it in the dumpster.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do at that point.
Nah, not even worth it at that point. And keep in mind, this was the Chinese versions that don't have that good of a reputation for working. I bet this amp is probably 8 or 10 years old. So it was quite an older one. They've since improved them, I've heard, since then. But
that's what I've heard that too. Right around that period, I do remember reading on some forums that there was some reliability issues with that era for whatever reason.
Right, right. So I always used to joke that the CC2 meant for Chinese crap number two, like poop. Not that doesn't mean like all Chinese stuff is crap. That's not what I mean. But it was just kind of an offhanded joke I would like to make about that particular Vox amp, which never did work right.
No.
But anyway,
I want to talk to you about something else.
Okay. So I have to backtrack just to add this part on here. So
do it.
So we had some comments on Instagram and all that sort of thing. I think my favorite one was that's not what you meant by throwing a rat in front of the Vox, right?
That's a good one. I like it. That's a solid play.
So anyways, you were saying?
I just got kind of distracted by that comment because I've just realized I don't think I've ever tried playing with a rat in front of a Vox, now that you mention it. I've never heard that combo.
I'm sure I have. I don't recall, but I'm game to trying it. You know, I'm willing to take one for the team and throw a rat in front of my AC30 and see what it sounds like.
I'm very curious now because I know, at least in my experience, and we've talked about this before, that AC amps tend to be kind of picky with dirt pedals for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Some work great, like, you know, like a Hotcake or something, Timmy, things like that. But like, so I don't know, like a Tube Screamer sounds like bleh to me.
Some people can make it work.
At least when I play it.
Yeah. I mean, I've, like when Paisley, Brad Paisley, whenever he throws a tube screamer in front of him, it just works for him. Very John Jorgensen sort of thing. But whenever I throw one in front of it, it just doesn't work the same. It sounds too honky and just not what I particularly like. But so I've heard others that love it, you know?
It almost sounds like a completely different, like, it's almost like when he plays it or somebody who, you know, has a really good feel for that setup, when they play it, it almost sounds like a different rig.
Yeah.
Than when I play it. It's really strange. Really, really strange.
Yeah, those amps are weird because they definitely let you know. They don't allow you to cheat in a way. Like if you play sloppy, you sound super sloppy on an AC30, which is probably why I don't like them that much.
Maybe. Well, that could be problem too.
I think they sound great, but every time I play with one, it's like it takes all my flaws and throws it right back in my face.
Yeah, they have like they're not forgiving at all, and I wonder if that's because like things they're a little less compressed because the way they're designed than like a Fender.
Yeah.
But I do know this. I watched Brian May play one or play two or however many he had. I don't know how many he had at the Oscars.
Yep.
Queen played the Oscars, and it sounded amazing. It sounded so good.
Yeah.
Wasn't at the Oscars. They didn't invite me. I don't know why.
That's just another guy who can take that amp and make it sound so wonderful. And I just can't get that from it. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, my home base, and I, you know, just last night, just for fun, I threw a TS9 in front of a twin, in front of a loud twin. I'm like, that's home base, man. That just sounds right to me. So
twin is just, it's just too much for me. Just too much. I need like a deluxe reverb or a Vibrolux.
The deluxe reverbs are, I like higher wattage amps. And it's not because they're a little bit louder. It's just, I feel like there's more bottom end and they just sound bigger and fuller. So, and I mean, I also use an attenuator a lot of times too. So it's not so loud. You can't stand to be in the same room with it.
See.
So yeah, I'm dropping it. I'm using the Two Notes Captor. I'm dropping it down 20 decibels or so. So I can crank it up and still, you know, not have ringing ears, you know?
So this is kind of a funny segue now that we're talking. I haven't told you about this yet, but I had a phone call with Mr. Bill Finnegan yesterday.
Oh, did you have that interview? Yeah, how'd that go?
Yeah, I didn't do the interview yet. This was like
the prelim,
him kind of seeing if he wanted to talk to me for that.
Okay,
basically, can I stand talking to this individual for that long? I don't know.
Right.
Let's have a phone call first.
So to kind of clarify this for everyone, Blake's talking about for his podcast, he's been wanting to have Bill on the Tone Mob podcast.
Yeah, and for maybe people who aren't as gear nerdy as us. Bill Finnegan is the guy who created the legendary Klon Centaur.
Yes.
So be really fun to talk to him and get his story. But what was cool is we did go off into, I mean, I know this is going to be shocking to the audience and very shocking to Brian here. We did go off topic and talk about some random things. I know, strange, right? But he was talking about one of the coolest things he'd heard. We were talking about Boss pedals. And he was talking about the OD-1. I was like, that's funny. I'm looking at an original OD-1 right now. And he said, I'm not like a huge fan of Boss drives in general. But he said one time he was in a little tiny club, like a 40-person club, watching Link Wray play in the 80s. And he had a twin on 10 and a Boss OD-1. And he said it was like the craziest sounding thing he'd ever heard.
Well, I bet.
I'm like, man, can you imagine a cranked twin in a small venue like that? It would just be like destroying everyone. And then Link Wray, the way he played, you know, was just straight up rock and roll. I can't imagine what that sounded like, but it was a really interesting story.
Man, a cranked deluxe reverb, and especially a cranked twin, they sound, and you wouldn't think so because they're primarily pedal, quote unquote, pedal platform amps or, you know, people like them for the clean tone. But whenever you do dime it, roll back the bass, it's so good and so crunchy. There's so many classic songs that are using like blackface amps that are just dirty. And they got such a good sound when they're dirty, man.
They do. I really like the way Fenders break up when they finally do. just that you have to really push them.
That, yeah, like, and it's in a twin, if you're not attenuating it, man, that's it is so loud. That would be the way to you know, to get your drummer back for those cymbal hits, you know, that drive all of us guitar players crazy. Just aim
how
your
many watts
twin
is
at
a
them.
Twin. How many watts is it? Is it 70?
Oh, is it 65 or 70? Of course you're going to ask me that. Let's see.
I know in like the 70s they went with the ultralinear transformers and that boosted them up significantly above that, I think.
Yeah.
But the original ones I think are 70?
85 watts. 4 ohm. 85 watts, 4 ohm speaker load. I was thinking it was an odd one, like 65 or something like that, but it's 85.
That's a lot when you're talking about a tube amp that's made to not break up, basically.
Yep.
like a high watt just is so incredibly loud.
Yeah.
Like, so cool.
Yep. Very true. But they sound good, man. They sound really
I would
good.
Like a high watt in my life now that I bring it up. I've never played one for an extended period of time. I would like to change that.
Yeah, me too. So if anyone has one out there you'd like to donate to the cause, I mean, you know, P.O. Box 2122, Martinsville, Indiana, we'll take care of that for you.
How about P.O. Box 3298, Oregon City, Oregon? And I'll send you $5.
I will make a video especially for you. How about that?
Oh man, I can't beat that.
Oh, but anyways.
So another thing that happened yesterday, which is kind of exciting. For those who are wondering, Bill is probably gonna do the Tone Mob podcast at some point. So look for that. You guys will know when that comes out. I'm gonna be screaming about it because he's never really done anything like that.
Yeah, I don't think he has. Has he done any podcasts, any interviews before?
He's done. As far as I know, he's never done a recorded interview like that. I do believe there was some written interviews that he was involved with. I don't know that for a fact, but I've read some
interviews with him, and I've talked to him on the phone, but I've never heard like a podcast interview or seen a YouTube interview with him.
No, I don't think his voice has been recorded, at least in a format like that. Not that I'm aware of.
So that'd be a really good one. A very interesting one. I'm anxious for that one to come out.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed. He's a busy guy, and so hopefully we can make it happen soon. But in other things that's happening, I am currently sitting next to a drum set, and my friends brought his drums over, and we are going to be getting set up. We're going to be getting the band back in action to do some writing and practicing and recording, kind of like we were more frequently when I first started doing this podcast. So I'm really, really excited about that because I've been kind of noise rocking on my own for several years. So I'm very excited to get back together with the band. We didn't like break up or anything. We just slowly didn't have time to play. We still hung out with each other, but we just didn't really play guitars and stuff as much. So I'm very excited to get recording again.
I'm just picturing
one of my favorite things to do.
I'm picturing you at home going, "Honey, I'm getting the band back together," and she's like, "But you sold the van." You know, something like that.
I did make that reference, and it went right over her head, and I was very depressed. Like, oh man, I set you up with that one.
Oh man!
But she did do kind of a funny thing because I told her that like we were gonna be, you know, practicing over here in the shred shed. Like a few weeks ago, and I told her, "Yeah, Josh is bringing the drums back over, so I'll be helping him with that this afternoon." And she goes, "Josh just got a new house. How come he can't keep his drums at his own house in his nice big basement?" And I was like, "Well, we're not gonna go, you know, we're not gonna go jam and practice over there. Like that's right in their house." And she was like, "Then I seen the math ticking by in her head." She was like, "Oh no. This is really happening, isn't it?" Like, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's so much fun. That's actually something I've been wanting to do as well is I've played, you know, off and on in like your standard bar band, Indiana, Midwest Indiana type of scenario, which is basically means we play a lot of Lynyrd Skynyrd. You play some newer country, so you play the Luke Bryan and the Jason Aldean, and or Jason Aldean, as you all call him.
And I was liking that pronunciation better.
Aldean, yeah,
Aldean,
Jason Aldean, and you know, you play all that sort of thing that's on Indiana country radio.
I'm sorry.
So yeah, so and one of my good friends who I've played with off and on for years now, it was asking if I could play some gigs with them, and I'm like, man, I love you, dude, but I am so over just playing in bars for five sets and, you know, four or five sets and playing songs that I really don't want to ever hear again, let alone play. And like, what I really want to do is find a couple guys or girls, whoever, I say guys generically, a couple people, I should say more accurately, who just want to write and record some stuff. You know, yeah. I want to create something rather than reproduce something that's already out there. So, reached out to an old drummer buddy of mine, and he was kind of thinking along the same line. So, who knows? Maybe we can start doing that.
That'd be really cool. It's so rewarding.
Oh, it is.
To do things like that.
And I have no inclination to, like, you know, what we should do is, like, we should get a van and we should tour. Like, I would like to make some stuff and put it out on some Spotify lists or whatever. But, you know, I guess it's more for myself. I'm being selfish. I enjoy that more.
No, I relate to that in a big way. My whole time of being involved with music and making music, it was never about, like, I'm going to go on tour and this is going to be what I do. Cause I honestly was like, that lifestyle looks pretty miserable. I can see the highlights, but it also looks like a huge grind. And not something I was ever interested in, but I do love the creative process of writing and recording. I just love it. So, it was always like, we got these songs inside and we got to get them out. And if people like them, they can check them out. If not, that's fine. No worries.
Yeah,
I gotta get, just like you said, so kind of selfishly, I gotta get them out for me,
right?
Like, and I guess it is a weird way to be selfish, but it is kind of a selfish thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm getting older, and the idea of playing, you know, doing the same thing I've done for years is just not as rewarding as it once was, you know. I guess I wouldn't be against playing a show somewhere if we had to, but I've here, at least locally here in Indiana, unless you're a blues band, because we have a really popular blues club here called the Slippery Noodle. But if you're playing something other than blues, it tends to seem like if you do a show with all originals, there's like four people there, and they're usually the spouses of the people in the band.
Right.
You know? And you don't really draw a good crowd with originals here. It's just I don't know. It's just a weird climate where people don't really want to hear original music. You know?
Yeah, it's weird. I don't think that's entirely unique to your area either. And I've always thought of Portland as having a very robust music scene and everything, but at the same time, I was always kind of on the outskirts of it. I didn't actively partake in local bands and you know, do all that whole thing. And I talking to some local musicians, and they're like, yeah, the scene around here actually isn't that good unless you're like a known national touring act. You know, and it, you don't have to be a huge band, but, you know, somebody that gets around a little bit and can play mid-level clubs. Like, the independent music scene there's a ton of artists, so many, but I guess it's a little bit of a struggle, like you said, just to get people out to a show, which is a bummer. It's not something I thought was an issue in our town, but then I think about how I participate in the music scene, and it's like, yeah, when somebody I'm really excited about comes to town, I go see them, but I don't just go to a random music club and check out some band I've never heard before.
Yeah, and
a lot of people do that.
I would think, yeah, Portland, if anywhere, is going to be one of those towns where original music is appreciated more. but you know,
it's appreciated. I just, I feel like it's hard to get attention, and maybe it's because there are so many bands. Like everybody's in a band or doing something creative. And so maybe it's a kind of like being in the pedal business. It's a saturation point and hard to get attention. That could be it. I don't really know what the reason
is. It's kind of like coming out with your new Tube Screamer, right? It's like everybody's already done it.
But this one has swirly paint.
You understand, you could change the clipping diodes on this one.
Mm-hmm. If you put it in this position, it sounds more open.
Yep, I get it. Been there, done it. Yep.
Got the t-shirt.
Mm-hmm. So anyway. Yeah, so okay, let's got time for one more topic, looks like.
All right, let's do it.
I think this was originally a question on a Facebook group, I think. I did write the person's name down. It was Nathan Long. So Nathan, this might be your question. I forget. But it was basically, is your parts caster as worthless to everyone except you? Is it worthless to everyone except you?
Gotcha.
Meaning, you know, you got this great, and it, you know, I've seen some great quote unquote parts casters, and we'll talk about what that is in a second. But I've seen a lot of people have this great parts caster that they're trying to sell for the price of a new, well-known, like a Sur or something like that, you know? And like, I get it. I'm sure it's a great instrument, but it doesn't have the market value as that Sur or that Whitfield or that Friedman or whatever, you know, is going to have. So parts caster being like, you know, you go to an online internet store on the World Wide Web that sells guitar parts. They may have bodies, necks, keys, bridges, knobs, you know, pickups, all that good stuff.
And you wire the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. And you basically assemble this guitar with whatever parts you want to use, and you make it your own. You know, whatever. If you want a certain kind of fret wire, you buy that certain kind of fret wire. Or, you know, a certain size neck and all that good stuff. You really can customize it a lot. And I mean, I've played a number of those that sound really good. I just, unless you have a name that's marketed behind it, I think it's really hard to sell that for the same price as other similar type guitars with a better name. And that's just the market. You know, in the same way that you can find $60 pedals on Reverb that are probably just every bit as good as a, you know, $200 pedal, you know?
Yeah. I mean, to a degree, you
know,
to a degree. There's a lot that comes with buying. And I'm not going to sit here and try to say that everyone needs to buy brand name everything, but there is a lot that comes with buying a brand. You know, it's like I purchased a guitar from a small builder, you know, and he, you know, Kevin Equitz, I talked about that guitar before. And he was like, you know, while he doesn't have like a huge brand, he does have a brand. And he made it known like, hey, you know, you get me with this guitar. So if like something goes wrong or something's not quite how you want it, you let me know. And it's kind of the same thing with Sur or you know, Whitfield or any like anybody with a reputation, they have to stand behind their stuff. Yeah. Joe Blow Parts Caster Incorporated doesn't really have to do that.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people don't really think about is that whenever you're buying a product, whether it's a $30 pedal or a $300 pedal, you're buying part of that company, so to speak. So you're buying their customer service, you're buying everything that they can do to help you. You know, maybe you just have a common question about, hey, you know. My guitar is acting weird. What should I do? Who should I contact about this? In my opinion, a good company will help their customer solve their problems, even if it doesn't pertain to that particular product. You know, so
I think so too.
I mean, that's what. Yeah, we do so much of that, just helping people solve problems. But you know, that's a big reason for the podcast and the YouTube channel and like all that stuff is basically an attempt to help customers and potential customers solve their problems and hopefully entertain them a little bit along the way.
I just do it to annoy them. That's the only reason I do it.
You do that so well. You know, you are the best at annoying people. you know?
I know it. I've heard. I've read the comments. I know you're not supposed to, but I've read the comments.
Don't read the comments. Don't do that. Yeah, it's YouTube comments are so full of vitriol.
Yeah.
They're so venomous. Yeah. I graduated high school. I know all the words. Anyways,
I have the best words.
I know the best words.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyways, I don't know. That totally threw me off my game.
Oh yeah. So is the part, I mean, in summary of all of that, is the parts caster worthless to everyone except you? So,
MGGA, no, make guitar great again. Boom.
Steve from 60 Cycle was walking around NAMM with a awesome hat. It was a yellow hat and it said, make riffs sick again. And I loved it so much.
Oh, that is awesome. Yes. I need one of those hats actually. What if he sells dad hats?
My thoughts on the parts caster are basically the same as yours. It's like, no, it's not worthless, but you're not most likely going to get what you paid for those parts individually.
Nor
your time. It just is the reality of it. That said, you can make an amazing guitar that way. You really can make a super, super cool instrument by going that route. So if that's something you're interested in for yourself, I think that's 100% a viable way to go. But don't think that you're going to get your money back out of it or make any money with one-off parts caster builds. I'm sure some people have been able to do that, but it's not what the market generally wants.
Right.
My two cents.
Yeah. Boom. Couldn't send it better. So if you have any comments or questions, you can always email podcast@wamplerpedals.com. That reaches me. You can email Blake at info@tonemob.com. That reaches Blake. And make sure you check out his podcast as well. He's got a YouTube channel and a Facebook group. And we, you know, all the stuff that us gear nerds generally have and use and incorporate into our daily lives. We have all of it. We have the best stuff, you know?
That's right. The best.
We have the best of the best. Yeah. So that's all I got.
That's it.
Wait, hold on. So you're screwing up my outro now. I don't have the best outros, apparently.
I'm only here to be annoying. Remember? That's why I'm here. I forgot what I was saying. Outro away, Mr. Wong.
All right. So thank you all for listening. Leave an iTunes review if you haven't left one. That really helps us get some traction, reach more people. But only leave good ones. Don't leave the bad ones. It's like, who would leave? Don't take your time to leave a bad review on anything unless it's really that bad that you want others to know, which kind of contradicts my earlier statement. You know what? Just leave an iTunes review. That would really help us. And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye.